This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Good evening, my friends. Yeah, it's your old pal Fred Brackman back here once again with the Tuesday evening sports from the pages of USA Today for Tuesday, April 30th. Well, starting off this evening, Mike Freeman has a story on the front page. The headline says, Candace Parker retires as a hero. One of the greatest athlete stars of our time, Candace Parker, announced her retirement on social media Sunday. Barely an hour after her announcement, she was congratulated by Charles Barkley, Olympic sprinter Allison Felix, Tina Charles from the WNBA's Atlanta Dream, former NBA star Jamal Crawford, Basketball Hall of Famer Reggie Miller, former NBA All-Star Baron Davis, Olympic soccer gold medalist Carly Lloyd, the WNBA's Chinne Ogwumike, a journalist and author Jameel Hill, and entertainer Justin Timberlake. They know. They all know just how monumental a force Parker was and how important it is to document this moment. As a player, Parker was both ferocious and gracious. Powerful and fluid, she brought rigor and intellect to the industrial battle that is professional basketball, where the test of greatness lies in how a player manages the sport's grueling schedule. She passed that test over and over again. She elevated above it all. The statistics don't tell all of the story, but they do sing a remarkable song. As ESPN summarized, she won NCAA titles at Tennessee in 2007 and 8. Then she was picked first in the 2008 WNBA draft. She won titles with the LA Sparks in 2016. She was the finals MVP. The Chicago Sky in 2021 and the Las Vegas Aces in 2023. That made her the first player in WNBA history to clinch titles with three different teams. She was also a two-time league MVP, a seven-time WNBA All-Star, the Defensive Player of the Year in 2020, and a two-time Olympic gold medalist. Parker remains the first and only player to be named WNBA MVP as a rookie. When Parker was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People of 2022, Dwayne Wade wrote her story for the magazine. He said, "As a fellow athlete and a fellow parent, I admire what she's accomplished and how she has taken her daughter all over the world while playing to provide for her family. Her commitment is unparalleled, as are her insights. Through her work as an NBA commentator, she always offers me a different way to think about the game. She is inspiring not only to the next generation of players, but also to all young people. And she uses her platform with incredible intent, most recently producing a feature-length documentary about how Title IX advanced the cause of gender equality in the U.S. So many young women watching Candace are seeing how she's living out loud and achieving greatness. Her legend is only growing," he finished. Parker is one of the most influential athletes ever, but that doesn't tell the full story of who she is and what she's done. Because just as important is that she was one of the most influential black athletes of all time. Parker inspired a generation of black girls to believe that not only could they be basketball players, but a TV analyst, a business person, a leader, a philanthropist, and a documentary filmmaker. They saw her excel, push to excel, and wanted to do the same. Yes, she inspired all kinds of girls and people, but Parker's blackness was particularly notable. In many ways, her influence rivals that of Serena Williams or LeBron James. If that seems crazy, you haven't paid attention to her career or what she's meant to basketball, or how she's been fearless addressing social issues when it's not always easy for black female athletes to do so. Parker actually had two time moments. In 2020, for the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, she wrote a column that carried the headline, "We Don't Need Men to Save Us." Parker wrote, in part, about her love of history and her incredulity over how long it took black women to get the right to vote long after white women had earned it. Understanding history helps us appreciate the present, but also plan for the future, she wrote. It's been 100 years since the 19th Amendment, which allowed women the right to vote, was enacted. I say women, but really it only applied to white women. An African-American woman like myself would be unable to legally vote until 1965, some 45 years later. Another way to put it, only 21 years before I was born were women who looked like me given the right to vote. Think about that for a minute. Not only 1965, but not until 1965, only 55 years earlier than this very moment, did we stop holding back people's rights based on what they look like. Parker, while on the court, was potent and staggering. The dunks, the dimes, the boards, the blocks, the smile, the swagger, the memories Candace Parker created for a generation of women's basketball fans will remain ingrained in our collective conscious forever. For she has given so much more to the game beyond her accolades and statistics. That quote from the team, the Las Vegas Aces, in a statement. As a teammate and mentor, a mother and wife, a baller, broadcaster, and businesswoman, she has inspired countless young people, both boys and girls, to chase and achieve their dreams. She was, if it's possible, even more impressive off the court. She wasn't just a hero. She was one of the greatest black athlete heroes we've ever seen. Well, the NFL draft has finally concluded. Lorenzo Reyes has this story on the front page, which is headlined, "Still Under Construction," meaning six NFL squads have huge gaps to fill on their rosters. The NFL draft is in the books, and while we know the winners and losers, there are plenty of questions left to answer. Mainly, many teams filled major holes on their rosters, but some still have gaps that they need to address prior to the start of the 2024 season. The biggest problem for those teams that still do have holes, aside from trades executed in the months leading up to training camp and the start of the season, the only other opportunity to add depth and talent will be around cut day, when teams whittle their rosters to 53 players in late August. Here's a look at the NFL teams that still have significant needs even after the draft. Well, the Las Vegas Raiders need a quarterback. Arguably the most glaring deficiency left unfulfilled, the Raiders are retaining uncertainty at the sport's most important position. To a certain extent, Las Vegas was a victim of circumstance. The Raiders held the number 13 overall selection in the first round, and with Atlanta Falcons picking Michael Penix Jr. at number 8, the Minnesota Vikings trading up to take J.J. McCarthy at number 10, and then the Denver Broncos perhaps reaching for Bo Nix at number 12, the Raiders made do and drafted the best player available. Tight end Brock Bowers is an offensive weapon who should stretch the field and contribute right away. The Raiders, of course, could have invested draft capital to move up to take a quarterback, but the Raiders felt confident enough last season in Adrian O'Connell to bench Jimmy Garoppolo. Still, O'Connell and free agent acquisition Gardner Minshew are far from game changers at their position, and the team will almost certainly address its need at quarterback in the near future. The Dallas Cowboys, running back. Sometimes the draft simply plays out where a team may be targeting a player at a position of need, only to see him drafted several slots ahead of their position. That may have been the case twice for the Cowboys, who lost running back Tony Pollard in free agency to the Tennessee Titans. 10 slots before Dallas was set to pick late in the second round, that's number 54, the Carolina Panthers selected in-state running back Jonathan Brooks, who played for the Texas Longhorns. Then, in the third round, the Cowboys may have been looking to answer their running back need with Florida State's Trey Benson, whom the Arizona Cardinals selected 7 picks before Dallas drafted Kansas State guard Cooper Beebe at number 73. Team owner Jerry Jones and the Cowboys haven't shied away from using premium draft capital for running backs, an integral position in Coach Mike McCarthy's offense. The team is apparently reuniting with Ezekiel Elliott, but he's an aging back in decline who posted career lows in starts, only 5, 184 attempts, and 642 rushing yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, 33 first downs, and his yards per carry were only 3.5. The Miami Dolphins, well, they still need a defensive tackle. On the one hand, it made sense that the Dolphins did not re-sign Christian Wilkins in free agency. Wilkins drew what would have been a massive pay increase before he eventually signed with the Raiders. Yet the Dolphins failed to adequately replace Wilkins, whose 9 sacks in 2023 and disruptive presence on the interior of the defensive line were essential to Miami's operation. The Dolphins did draft Penn State edge rusher Chop Johnson at number 21 to bolster their overall defensive line health, but with Bradley Chubb, torn ACL, and Jalen Phillips with a torn Achilles recovering from significant injuries, the unit could struggle without an anchor in the middle. Unproven third-year pro Benito Jones is likely to step in for Wilkins, a clear downgrade at that position. In Atlanta, well, the Falcons need an edge rusher. In fact, they ranked 19th in the NFL last season in sacks per pass attempt at 7.65, and that was with their leading but aging edge rushers and Bud Dupree and Calais Campbell on the team. Dupree and Campbell tied for the team lead in sacks with 6.5, and each saw their contracts expire at the end of last season. This is what makes Atlanta's selection of Michael Penix Jr. at number 8 overall, after the Falcons had signed Kirk Cousins to a deal worth $100 million in guaranteed money, as even more confounding. The Falcons, realistically, could have traded back to stash some more draft capital, fill actual needs, and reaffirm the team's win-now moves. This is only magnified, given that a record number of offensive players, 14 in fact, were taken to start the draft. The Falcons could have easily fallen back to take UCLA edge rusher Laiatu, who went number 15 to Indianapolis, or Alabama's Dallas Turner, who went 17 to the Minnesota Vikings. And over in Baltimore, the Ravens didn't help their offensive line very much. They deserve credit for building consistently solid offensive lines over the past several seasons, so some benefit of the doubt should be applied to their process. Still, Baltimore's offensive front had 3 of its 5 starters leave this offseason, with guards John Simpson and Kevin Zeitler signing elsewhere in free agency, and right tackle Morgan Moses traded to the New York Jets. The Ravens used 2 of their 9 picks on offensive linemen, with Washington right tackle Roger Rosengarten at number 62 overall likely being thrust into a starting role as a rookie. The Ravens might opt to move Rosengarten inside to one of the guard spots and rely on the larger Daniel Faleli, a 2022 fourth rounder, to man the right tackle spot. Baltimore's other offensive line draft selection was a 7th-round flyer on Michigan State center Nick Samick, who may not contribute for seasons if he does at all. That still leaves massive questions at right tackle and at least one of the guard positions. Considering that left tackle Ronnie Stanley is entering the final season of his contract and has played in just 31 games since 2020, The team's lack of depth along the entire offensive line is even more concerning. And finally, in Buffalo, well, they might need a wide receiver, yep. The Bills used their first selection after they traded out of the first round to pick a wide receiver in Florida State's Keon Coleman at number 33. But no, that's not enough to fully address the need at this position. Coleman could be a day one starter, but he will unfairly be tasked to replace Stephon Diggs, a player who was nominated to Pro Bowls in each of his 4 years in Buffalo. He accounted for 5,372 receiving yards and 37 touchdowns during that span. Frankly, Coleman may be better suited in the NFL to become an eventual number two option, though he should find some success in the red zone. Still, the Bills actually lost more than Diggs, as previous number two receiver Gabe Davis signed with Jacksonville Jaguars this offseason. Well, Major League Soccer heats up now, coming into the middle part of the early part of the season. Taking a look at the standings quickly here. Inter Miami with Lionel Messi are 6-2, three draws. They are sitting on 21 points. But next, our own beloved FC Cincinnati, that team needs a nickname, 5-2-3 with 18 points. They're behind. New York Red Bulls, Toronto FC, and Columbus round out the top five in the East. In the West, Real Salt Lake, LA Galaxy, Vancouver, DC United, and Colorado make up the top five. This weekend, the games include Orlando City coming to visit us here at TQL Stadium, 7:30 Saturday night. Inter Miami is up against the New York Red Bulls, that game at 7:30. And just quickly, this is not in the paper, but I got a comment on it. How about those Cincinnati Reds? Went out to San Diego last night and put a whooping on the Padres. How about that Nick Lodolo? Man, I'm glad he's back. He had 11 strikeouts in 7 innings. Just one hit he gave up and one earned run. And then on the offensive side, and how about Ellie De La Cruz? Hit a home run in the first inning. That gives him 8 for the month of April. And he picked up a stolen base as well. So he's got 18 stolen bases. And I read somewhere that he's the only player in Major League history, at least current Major League history, to actually do that. All those home runs, all those stolen bases. Man, you know what? If I was the king of the Cincinnati Reds, I'd be bringing him over for dinner and talking long-term contract right now. Now, I wouldn't wait. Okay, moving along here. And now, golf. Adam Shupak has a story here. That the headline says, McIlroy teams up for the 25th PGA Tour win. The cream finally rose to the top at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. In a city where celebrity chefs like the late Paul Prudhomme and Emeril Lagasse rule, past major winners and European Ryder Cup stars Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry teamed up to take their title with a par on the first hole of a sudden-death playoff on Sunday in Avondale, Louisiana. McIlroy, ranked number 2 in the world and Lowry at number 39, needed a birdie at number 18 to finish with a 72-hole total of 25 under 263 and forced a playoff with Chad Ramey and Martin Trainer, who finished their round 2 hours and 59 minutes earlier after shooting a tournament-tying 9-under 63 in the alternate shot format employed in the final round. Alternate shot simply means the players take turns hitting the ball. So one guy tees off, next guy hits a ball, and then the first guy, second guy, etc. McIlroy earned his 25th career PGA Tour title, tying Tommy Armour, Johnny Miller, and McDonald Smith for 23rd on the all-time wins list. To win any PGA Tour event is very cool, but to do it with one of your closest friends, well, we've known each other for a long time, like over 20 years, and so to think about where we met and where we've come from, to be on this stage and do this together, really, really cool journey that we've been a part of. Yeah, just awesome to be able to do it along this guy, McIlroy said. On paper, the playoff was a mismatch of epic proportions. Ramey, who's 31, entered the week ranked 233rd in the world and outside the top 125 in FedEx Cup standings. His lone win at the opposite field Corrales Punta Cana Championship back in 2022. Trainer, who's 33, won the 2019 Puerto Rico Open but has struggled so much in the ensuing years that he considered finding another line of work. He entered the week ranked 387th in the world and 171st in the FedEx Cup standings. With both in need of a partner last year, they joined forces and they recorded a top 10 finish at the Tour's lone official team event during the FedEx Cup season. "So we decided to run it back this year, and I feel like we have a good thing going," Trainer said. On a wind-swept Sunday, they combined to make 11 birdies, including the first five holes on the back nine to take the clubhouse lead. "We just had it going so well," Trainer said. "I don't want to take all the credit for the putting because Chad also putted extremely well, but it worked out so well." Ramey agreed the Trainer's putter was deadly and the birdies kept piling up. "I finally had to putt on hole 13 or 14, and I hadn't putted since the second," Ramey said. "I was just trying to give Martin some good looks." Then they had time for lunch and waited as Ryan Brehm and Mark Hubbard shot 69 and finished third, gave it their best shot. Hubbard credited a text from his brother on Saturday night that helped pump him up about playing in the second-to-last group with McIlroy and Lowry, telling him to treat it as his personal Ryder Cup. "This is about the closest thing, certainly, that I've had so far in my career. I definitely took that to heart and tried to be really grateful for the opportunity today to kind of feel what that might be like playing against an all-European team in that crazy format. Alternate shot is just so stressful," Hubbard said. Narrowly missing out on joining the playoff when Brehm's 10-foot birdie putt from the fringe at the last burned the right edge couldn't spoil what still amounted to a successful partnership. "We're still going to party tonight," Hubbard added. For much of the day, it looked like 54-hole leaders Zach Blair and Patrick Fishburne, who grew up playing together in Ogden, Utah, and had been teammates in junior high, high school, and college at BYU, would both be celebrating their first tour victories. However, they made a double bogey at a par 3 on each side, the latter at 17, and that kind of sealed their fate, a fourth-place tie. McIlroy and Lowry entered the day trailing by two, and their hopes for wearing the belts awarded to the champions became dicier after they made bogey on two of their first three holes. But they bounced back with four birdies in a five-hole stretch starting at seven and then played the last 12 holes at five under. "It showed a lot about our characters and how much we wanted to win this thing," Lowry said. None of it came easily, including at 13 when McIlroy had to play from 111 yards in a sand-filled divot and chunked it. Still, they salvaged par, and at 14, McIlroy drew a beauty at the par 3 that stopped 10 feet past the hole. He twirled his club in satisfaction, but Lowry, who switched putters this week and admitted he never fully trusted the club, misread the putt. Lowry contributed at 16 after McIlroy drove into a fairway bunker. He hit a wedge from 133 yards to 10 feet, and McIlroy clenched his fist when the birdie putt dropped to make it a three-way tie at the top. Just when they seemed poised to put the tournament away, Lowry missed the 17th green wide right into the crowd, and they failed to rescue par, dropping one stroke behind again. But McIlroy's pitch from left of the green on the par 5 18th hole hopped and stopped 3 feet from the hole for the tying birdie and a round of 4-under 68. The playoff, which returned to 18, lasted just one hole because Trainer duffed a chip for his team's third shot, and after making putt after putt all day, he failed to convert a six-footer to keep their dream of winning alive. Trainer looked up to the sky in dismay, knowing he had pushed the putt right of the hole. "Golf is hard. Sometimes it doesn't go your way," he said. It marked the first win of the tour season for McIlroy, who had recorded just one top 10 finish to date at the Valero Texas Open earlier this month, and the first victory for Lowry since claiming the 2019 British Open. The latter also became exempt for the final three signature tour events. "We felt like coming into the week that we both could do with a big jump in the FedEx Cup, and we both said at the start of the week, let's go and get 400 points each. That's what we've done. And I nearly feel a little bit bad taking them because Rory carried me a lot of the way, but yep, they're mine and they're not going away," Lowry said. From playing together in junior golf to the Ryder Cup, and now winners at the Zurich Classic, Lowry and McIlroy have shared a special bond. "Anytime this man wants to partner with me, I'm happy to do so," Lowry said. "I'd say we're going to come back and defend next year. What do you think?" McIlroy said to his partner. "I hope so," Lowry said. "I will be here." And in case you've missed it, there are some changes for the CBS program NFL Today. CBS's iconic NFL pregame show will have a much different look this fall, with two familiar faces leaving the set. The network announced Monday that 2016 MVP Matt Ryan will be joining the cast of the NFL Today, while longtime veterans Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason will not be returning. Ryan, who led the Atlanta Falcons to the Super Bowl in his MVP season, officially announced his retirement from the NFL last week. He joined CBS Sports last season as an NFL game analyst and appeared in studio during the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl. Simms, his departure marks the end of an era for him at CBS. The former New York Giants quarterback, who's 68, served as lead game analyst for nearly 20 years before transitioning to the studio and working alongside Esiason, former Pittsburgh Steelers coach Bill Cowher, ex-wide receiver Nate Burleson, and host James Brown. Boomer, who played quarterback for 14 seasons with our beloved Bengals and the Jets and the Cardinals, spent more than two decades on this NFL Today set, making him the show's longest tenured analyst. "More their decision than maybe mine," Boomer said on his New York radio show Monday morning. He will continue his association with the network, with his WFAN radio show also simulcast on the CBS Sports Network. Both Esiason and Simms had their contracts expire after the Super Bowl, and CBS chose not to renew them. Well, that's going to do it for the show tonight, my friends. Once again, I do thank you so much for listening. And until next time, this is your old pal, Fred Brackman, for Radio Reading Services, wishing you an unbelievable Tuesday evening.